Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us today here at On the Morning Show this Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. And this is The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY, and I'm one of your hosts this morning. I'm Susie Prez, and I have a guest co-host. I have Jean Girth here with me. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Susie. You got me up early.
I know. And thank you so much for being with us. Chris is out of town. He'll be back next week. And we have a fun show planned. You're going to talk about Euryades Village and your time in Ethiopia.
Yes.
And then our second guests will be Rebecca Holland and Sparrow Ivy from the North Idaho Women's March 2. And we'll get to that in a little bit. You know, we had planned to have Jennifer Phils Crook and Sarah Clintworth and from Euryades Village, and they were not able to make it. So I'm really glad that you were scheduled to be my co-host, and you know all about it. So we'll get to that in a minute. Before we do that, let's hear about the weather. How does that sound?
Good.
And the temperature outside right now from the National Weather Service is 32 degrees. Today we can expect a high of 39 with patchy fog and then chance of rain, about 30% chance. Tonight the low is 35 with 90% chance of rain, which will be rain here but snow on the mountain. And on Thursday, high of 40 degrees, 90% chance of rain. Lots of precipitation in our future all the way through Sunday, it looks like, with the temperatures going down and possible snow showers through the weekend. You can just check that out at the National Weather Service. So, Jean, what else do you want to say this morning besides that, the weather?
It's another beautiful day.
There you go.
Sandpoint.
Yeah. And as I said, we were hoping to have Euryades Village folks, Sarah Clintworth and Jennifer Phils Crook in. But, you know, you recently and went over to Ethiopia to the Euryades Village site. And why don't you just tell us about that, what you went over for? You're a hearing screening, you're a speech therapist. So there was some reason you went over.
Yes, because I've worked with kids my whole life. I've worked with kids with disabilities. And I got to know Jennifer, and we worked out a plan for me to go over there and help with some of the kids with special needs. So it was quite an opportunity.
Right. And for the listeners that don't know, tell us about the children with special needs. Where are they and where did you go and what's going on over there with Euryades Village?
Well, the special needs aspect of it is that, well, number one, there's a lot of orphans in Ethiopia, so there's a high demand. And the kids with special needs are not accommodated the way they are in this country. We have the American with Disabilities Act. Well, they don't have that in Ethiopia. So Jennifer, it really has a heart for kids with special needs. And so there's several at the village. And then while I was there, there was another, the director of another orphanage, she and Jennifer got together, and they had a child who was 18 months old with severe disabilities. And so we were able to bring that child to Soto, which is where Euryades Village is, the town in Ethiopia. They have quite a good hospital there. And so this child came there for a day and a half and got a thorough medical, going over with the pediatrician. And between Jennifer and I, we were able to figure out some exercises, some stretches to give to the caretakers, which actually provided some immediate relief for the child just in his breathing. And then Jennifer, as she does, got on it and is working on a medical visa for this child so he can get here where there's a lot more services. They just don't have the services there. Mm-hmm. So,
is this child an orphan?
Yes. Yes. Okay. At a different orphanage, but they, you know, they're just not set up. And Jennifer knows a lot about special needs.
So Euryades Village is really an orphanage in Soto, which is probably the second largest city in Ethiopia, possibly about, you said, 98,000 100,000.
Yeah, it's under 100,000. Mm-hmm. In comparison, the capital, Addis, has 3.5 million. But it's a big town, and there's a missionary hospital there called Soto Christian Hospital, which is really a big part of this because she's got, the orphanage has good resource for medical care, which is enormously helpful.
And the reason we have Jennifer and Sarah on quite often is because they're based out of Sandpoint, but the orphanage is over there in Ethiopia. So they go back and forth.
And and what's really cool is this has become like a community-to-community support system. I don't know how many people from Sandpoint have been over there. I personally know of at least, you know, four who've gone over to help at the orphanage. And really a big part of it, building the actual physical plant, getting the permaculture gardens in. And I just see it spreading. You know, there's more people here who know about the village who are willing to help either by going over or by contributing some resources for it.
And that's really Jennifer's doing, is kind of getting Sandpoint to sort of adopt Yerati's village over in Ethiopia as a sister village, so to speak.
Yes, yes. And I think if we could become sister cities, that would be another step just towards our international understanding of each other. I think that was one of the things I had a hard time when I was there, because it's overwhelming. And there's a lot of poverty. And it just became quite real to me that what we have and what we have to share and what the need is in a lot of other places. They have a lot in terms of family and love, and just they have a very rich culture there, but they don't have infrastructure the way we do. And I think that's my understanding with Jennifer, is that's part of what they're building, is some infrastructure to support orphans, to support families. There's a whole nother program through the orphanage of supporting families so that their kids can stay in school, and so you don't have to pull your kid out of school to go work just to make ends meet. And my husband and I are we've contributed to that, and I got to meet the girl who we're supporting that way. That was amazing. That was a quite special day for me. They come once a month to pick up their checks, and so I was, and the timing was good. I mean, it was fortunate that I was there at the right time. And she came in, and her mom was there, and at the end of our conversation through an interpreter, her mom said, well, could she come to the United States? And I said, yeah, we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. She's a little young still, needs to learn some more English. But those kind of connections, just, they're good.
Well, one of the things I noticed about Yerati's village, we've been hearing about it and having them in here for a couple of years, is Jennifer isn't daunted by the overwhelming task at hand, because she just goes child by child, let's take care of this and build something and keep moving forward, and with amazing amounts of energy and resolve.
Amazing amounts of energy. And I tried to fit in to help in certain circumstances. There was one day there were probably 8 kids from the orphanage going to the hospital, and just to keep track of what needed to be done with all of them. But yeah, she just goes. She just does it. And it's not just the orphanage. There was a neighbor child who had some pretty severe medical problems, and I don't even know how Jennifer found out about it. If the child came over, these are literally next door neighbors. So the next thing, you know, the kids going to the hospitals, getting medications. Jennifer's helping take care of the day-to-day stuff that needed to be taken care of. And these are the conditions that if it hadn't been treated, the child would have died. And it's in this country, it's just not something that would have gone unnoticed or untreated for very long. So, but she just does it. She just goes out, and I'm standing there with my eyes really big watching it all. But it was it was quite the experience.
So besides the culture shock, so to speak, on both sides, how much culture there is with the families, and then the infrastructure and what wasn't there. What else did you do? What else did you notice outside of the village, maybe the orphanage, Urati's village, that kind of was different than what we have here, or where kind of needs did you see?
Well, some of the things that were the hardest to look at were, I mean, you would see adults on the side of the road crawling because they had never had any intervention. And
so they were lame.
They were. Yeah. I mean, it was probably cerebral palsy or polio. I don't know what they're. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just really severe. And there's no help. There's no safety net. So there was one amazing story at the hospital, because I stayed at a guest house in the hospital area. There's a compound, and it was a very nice place to stay. But the stories you'd hear, there was one fellow who was on the compound grounds who was running a program to train people who had disabilities. I think it was to make wheelchairs. Well, this guy had shown up when he was a teenager at the gates of the hospital, and the doctors looked at him and said, well, do you want us to fix your legs? Because it was a simple operation, and they were able to help him walk again. And then he stayed around, and now he is helping other people in the same situation.
So when we talk about the need for universal health care and everyone gets health care here in this country, it's a matter of then going to a doctor, and there's lots of doctors to choose from and hospitals. That's not what you saw there.
No. I mean, it's not perfect here, but there are hospitals here. There are doctors. There are places that you can go and get help. And, well, there was a lot. It was a missionary hospital, the Soto Christian Hospital, where I was staying. So they had people rotating through on missions to a lot of doctors that volunteered their time. A nurse I became friends with who would go out on it was a 2-hour drive to go out into the villages to help the people in the villages who don't come in to the city. That's not part of their, oh, let's run into Soto. They don't do that.
Is that because of transportation?
Transportation, money, and just mindset. And a lot of times the people in the villages are speaking a language that's different than in Soto, because there's 80 different tribes in Ethiopia. It's hard for them to communicate with each other. So then they would identify the people who needed to come in, and then they would bring them into the hospital. It's just that the need is so great there.
Oh, so when you went to the Urati's village, to the orphanage itself, what did you notice as far as Jennifer and Urati's village built this up? And it's a permaculture orphanage.
Right. Big gardens. They're really going for being able to produce their own food. Which is, when you ask, you know, what's different when you go into Soto? Well, one thing is that you don't go to the grocery store and just buy everything you want. You go look at a lot of different stores and see what they have. And, you know, some things were available, some things weren't. But if Urati's village can grow good vegetables, feed the people who are there, and they're also, I believe, looking at expanding. And so if they can do more of that, then they can feed more people.
And the children who live, I know that the last time Jennifer and Sarah were here, they had just moved all the children into the Urati's village orphanage, one child at a time, because they're babies, most of them. A lot of them were at that time. So they have how many now, and what was it like for them compared to where they were maybe?
When I left mid-December, there were 75 kids, and I was there for, I think, a little less than 5 weeks. And in that time, 3 babies came in. So there's no lack of kids showing up. There's a big building. I'm bad at estimating, but, you know, it's house size, maybe a big house size, divided into a couple of rooms. And there's babies in cribs. These are totally made up figures in my head, maybe 15, 20 cribs in the room. And then there's another room that's for the toddlers. And they can go, there's outside area for them to go to, but it's not extensive. There's not a lot of grass in Ethiopia, period, so they're on concrete. There's nannies. There's a lot of nannies. They're just wonderful people. They're the most, I just liked looking at them. I couldn't really speak to them, which was pretty frustrating. There's some who can speak some English. And an Ethiopian woman who is kind of a partner with Jennifer.
That's sister.
Americh. Yeah, huh? And she speaks great English and very well educated. So there were those rooms, and if you walked into the toddler room, you would immediately have kids in your lap. And the babies just were on the floor sometimes, sometimes outside. And then there's downhill from there, there's three buildings, and one of them's a girls' dorm and one of them's a boys' dorm. And they have a nice central area with books and tables and things to do in their own bathroom, and then separate rooms with bunk beds. And there's a lot of kids, I don't know the exact breakdown, but there's a lot of kids there who are not babies. They're going to school. And so I was there one afternoon when they use these things called bajaj. They're like a three-wheeler with a cab on it. And that's like a big part of the transportation there. And it was like the clowns coming out of the VW bus. It was just, they were so cute. They just kept spilling out. So they'd been to school and they were in their little uniforms and they were coming back to the orphanage.
I have an idea. I want to hear more. I want to hear about how folks here that are listening at 88.5 KRFY can go onto a website. But first, I thought we could hear a song. I also want to hear about, after the song, you're a speech therapist, some of the things that are needed there, how people can, as you say, become a sister city, become people that care and get involved. But first, let's hear a song. You picked Jimmy Cliff, River of Babylon, and tell us why that might be the song or why you picked that song.
The Rastafarians, who were mainly in Jamaica, and it's held Haile Selassie as, some of them held it as the Second Coming. And so in the 1950s, Selassie offered land. The Rastafarians are a Back to Africa movement. And so he offered some land, and evidently 12 Rastafarians showed up in this town called Sheshemeni. And there is still a Rastafarian enclave there. I didn't see any of them. I wanted to, but I didn't see any of them.
Okay, so this is Jimmy Cliff, River of Babylon. We will be right back. This is The Morning Show on Wednesday, and we will be talking to you again a little bit more about Euradi's Village with Jean Girth. So we'll be right back. Stay with us. And that was Jimmy Cliff, Rivers of Babylon. And you're listening to The Morning Show right here at 88.5 KRFY. And by the way, this is listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And we are talking about Euradi's Village. I'm here with my co-host today, Jean Girth. And so let's continue that conversation a little bit, Jean, about the fact that there are such great needs, and that we have a connection here in Sandpoint to Euradi's Village in Ethiopia. You're a speech therapist. That's kind of some of the things that you worked on over there when you were there for 5 weeks recently. How can we as a community connect there? What can we do?
The simplest way is to go to their website, which is euradisvillage.org, and it's Euradis Village, all one word. And there's ways to donate money. The kids are in need of sponsors, or, you know, if you just want to donate some money. But you can also read about, I'm looking at our team under that tab, and you can read about the other people in Sandpoint who are there. Nicole Grimm, Eric.
Nicole is a nurse practitioner.
Right. There's quite a few people in Sandpoint. And so I think periodically they do gatherings and slideshows. We had one, there was one in September, I believe. And you go there and you get the feeling, you see the other people who are working and have a personal connection. So I would recommend that, just to get to know more about the village. Yeah. Read about it. Mm-hmm. Donate. Get to know the people here who are working on it, because there's lots of things that can be done. I'm going to be looking for donations for getting hearing screening equipment into the hospital there so that the kids at the village can have their hearing screened, but also other people in the community.
So getting your hearing screened, how does that help someone? Just let's get technical here.
Well, for early identification, for little kids who haven't learned language yet, it's really, really important to get some, even just knowing that there's a hearing impairment can then give you, you know that you have to try some alternative ways. There are kids who get hearing aids in Ethiopia. There's a school for the deaf not too far from there. There were two kids from the village who they found out were deaf after they got there. And Jennifer got them into the school for the deaf. So that's so just that knowing that and then addressing it. For adults, again, it's knowing it. There are some cheaper hearing aids that are available. So you just take the first step. You get some information.
I just for a moment wanted to veer off to Jennifer, because we've had her here in the studio several times, and I'm always struck by the bigness of her heart. It's real.
Oh, it's real.
Yeah.
It's real, and it's joyful.
Mm-hmm. Well, she started by, she has her own children, and then she started adopting children with special needs from other countries, China, and then eventually Ethiopia, and that's kind of where it was sparked. And she'll just say, you see the need, you can't say no.
Yep. Yep. And she seems to be able, she's very inventive. And she brings people in. I guess that's another good way to get involved in Yerati's Village, is to come to one of those gatherings and meet Jennifer, because she'll pull you in.
Mm-hmm. And next time they're in town and they have a gathering planned, we will have them on the radio to talk about it and give us an update, because that's what I feel every time they come in. We just get an update what's going on there and what's next, because the first time there was no orphanage there.
Amazing.
It was a thought.
Right.
And then they put it together with difficulty.
Oh, that's the other part of just dealing with the Ethiopian government. I mean, it's always hard dealing with government, but she's dealing with a different culture, with different languages, with having to travel from town to town. Travel in Ethiopia is not easy, and it takes a lot of courage. I think that her experience in the horse world, a lot of people there are in the horse world, and these are people who are used to dealing with big, powerful animals, and I think it's given them a lot of courage.
Well, it's wonderful hearing about your trip over there in December. And again, Yerati's Village website is Uryadis Village, one word, .org. And you can go there and see more, and thank you for sharing that information. We have our second guest coming up.
We have Rebecca Holland and Sparrow Ivy that are going to come and tell us about the Women's March 2, which is taking place on Saturday at noon at the middle school. So they'll give us what's going on, and the whys and the wherefores.
And we're first going to hear a song while we bring in our second guest and our first real guest. This is Steve Earle's You're Still Standing There. Why did you pick this song, Gene?
Oh, I thought you picked it, Susie.
Okay, we both like this song.
Anyways, we're still standing.
And it is Steve Earle's birthday today. So yeah. Happy birthday, Steve Earle. And here's You're Still Standing There. We'll be right back with our North Idaho Women's March 2 group. That's Rebecca Holland and Sparrow Ivy. Stay with us. And that was Steve Earle, You're Still Standing There. And we're back in the studios of 88.5 KRFY with a continuation of the morning show.
And I'm Jean Girth, and I've had the privilege of being the guest co-host today. And with us in the studio are Rebecca Holland and Sparrow Ivy, and they're two of the organizers for the upcoming Women's March 2, which is going to be on Saturday at noon at the middle at the Sandpoint Middle School. So we're just going to start with, tell us about the event. What's it going to look like? What will people see when they walk in, and what's going to happen?
We're going to hear from Rebecca first.
Good morning. Yes, we're going to be at the Sandpoint Middle School gym, and we have a really nice program set up. We have a number of tables, everything from voter registration to an important issue is a Medicaid expansion petition signing that will be available there. We have a wonderful group of speakers coming on. In particular, our keynote speaker is Paulette Jordan, and we are extremely excited. She is a two-term state representative out of Plummer, and she has thrown her hat into the ring for the Democratic nomination for governor, and she's a very, let's just say she's a very powerful lady. And that kind of speaks to our theme. Our theme is for this has been first she marched, then she ran. As you recall, last year it was the very first Women's March, and it just knocked everyone's socks off. There was 5 million people worldwide in 7 continents that went to the streets This, again, is what we always used to call a demonstration. We are demonstrating our feelings about current issues, and women are speaking up strongly, and that's what this is about.
And how is this march, what's going on in the rest of the world or country with women's marches this weekend? I understand there's more than just what's happening here, but we're part of a bigger picture.
For sure. I last heard there was like 680 some marches registered, and ours is one. Ours is the North Idaho March. So we are, let's say the closest other marches, there's one in Spokane, and then there's one in Missoula. So we represent this Sandpoint. We're having it here. And we're very grateful for the facility that we have. We're going to have it here. There was millions last year. I spoke to a friend yesterday from Olympia. Last year in Washington State, they met in Olympia at the State House, and they had hoped to have 2,000 people last year. They had 10 show up. They're expecting bigger, and we just invite all our good sisters and brothers, of course, to come and be supportive.
One of the things I remember from last year, we called it the Community March here, and we were surprised to have 1,000 folks. It had a different kind of feel. It was a response to something, maybe the election, or maybe just it's time to get together. And this year it has a lot more focus, a lot more identity to the segments. And just so you know, I did get a chance to hear Paulette Jordan speak at a house gathering, and she's worth coming down for just that. But coming together, what does that do? What does that say about our community? What are we hoping to gather from that?
Good morning.
And this is Robin Ivy, by the way.
Sparrow Ivy.
Sparrow. I'm sorry, Sparrow.
It's okay.
It's a beautiful bird, right?
I told you last time I'll answer to anything. To me, I see this as a double-pronged thing. I think, for one, every single woman that walks in there has her own idea of why she's there. So I think for everybody to look and see what their passion is that's going to bring them to this event that's going to be very individualized. The second thing is, as women, we all know we have issues that we're still dealing with, that we're still struggling with, and need to be continued to fought about. Medical, having access to medical care, whether it be for our daughters or our elderly mothers or sisters or whoever, for ourselves.
Or our sons.
Our sons, yes. And I thought about this, and I thought about this as a big ball of string. It's all connected. You cannot pull one thread apart. So when we look at medical, when we look at legal issues, when we look at fair pay, when we look at sexual discrimination, we're all, as women, dealing with this. So I like to call them our little women. I think a lot of what motivates this is our little women coming up, that we continue every generation to not want our littler ones to have to deal with what we're still dealing with, that our mothers and grandmothers dealt with since suffrage and even before that. So I think it's that two prong. We're all there for our individual passion, what's lighting our fire, and then we're all there to recognize each other, that we're in this struggle together, that we got to keep doing this struggle, and we need our good men out there, because there's a lot of good men, our brothers, our uncles, to come and stand with us, continue to help us, because again, it's that ball of string, we're all connected. So it's about everyone.
Well, one of the things I noticed at the community march last year was there are a lot of men. And this whole idea of what I think it was the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said, I am a feminist. And I loved his little talk at that moment in time because, you know, it's something men can feel good about, is being part of change in this direction.
This is inclusion. This isn't exclusion. And what that means is we're all inclusive in this. So everybody has a place at the table. This is for everyone. And I would like to give a shout out to especially those vulnerable populations that we need to continue to recognize, our Indigenous women and our women of color and those who have even perhaps more on their plate. We've got to wrap our arms around them and bring them with us.
And speaking of Indigenous, do you want to tell us more about Paulette? Paulette Jordan,
sure.
Who is going to be at the rally.
Well, State Representative Jordan is a Native American. She was born in Coeur d'Alene, part of the Coeur d'Alene tribe. And then she went on... I understand she went to Gonzaga, WSU, and also went on to the Harvard JFK School of Government. She's very bright. I too am really looking forward. I've only read about what some of her positioning, but she is very powerful, and I think we are feeling really, really just privileged that she is coming to see us. And then, by the way, in terms of this national march, national gathering, last year it was in Washington, D.C., the day after the inauguration. This year, most of these events are on Saturday in communities across the country. But then on Sunday, there's a huge gathering that's going to be happening in Las Vegas. And in fact, she is flying out of here, and she is one of the speakers. And there is the bank of speakers that are going to be there. They're coming together. So that's the whole concept of last year we marched, this year we run. This is about running for public office, making real change. You know, we know how to roll up our sleeves and get some work done. So that's what, you know, Paulette's going to, it's going to be quite exciting.
And I don't know if we've mentioned this, what Paulette is running for.
Yes, I had mentioned she's thrown her hat into the ring for Democratic nomination for governor of Idaho, which will be next November's election.
And the primary will be in May. That'll be her first time on the ballot in that race in
Correct.
May.
Good. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, something I wanted to mention here is we're primarily talking about our rally. We're going to be at the middle school, and we're going to rally in the gym. But thereafter, we are going to march. So we will be leaving after we've gone through, listened to our speakers and had opportunities to make it to the different tables, and there's going to be other things there too. But we will be marching. This is a permitted march, of course, with the city. And all the safety issues are handled, and we'd like to invite people to come. This is your opportunity to make a sign. What's your passion? This is we're focused on human rights, which have been under attack. And when we say human rights, we're championing human rights. We like to say for all. All is all, regardless of gender, race, nationality, sexuality, spirituality, or any other reality. You know, it's human rights for all. So come on out.
One idea I have is that having a future as an environment is also a human rights. Where does the environment come into this? Our work as environmentalists or caring about climate change, is that a part of what we're doing here on Saturday the 20th?
Certainly. It's like, well, like Sparrow was saying, it's we are all connected, and we are connected with our Mother Earth. So I would say yes.
Do you want to tell us more about who's going to be at the tables? The different, and there's other speakers too.
Yes, let's see. Rebecca Schroeder is coming up. She threw her hat into the ring, for state representative out of the Coeur d'Alene area. She is a, chairperson for the cystic fibrosis, Foundation, I believe it's called. Her son has that problem, and she knows and is addressing healthcare issues. So we're going to have a table again. I mentioned for the Medicaid expansion. That is a huge initiative that is going on in the state of Idaho,
and that's being hosted by a citizens advocacy group called Reclaim Idaho. So they're going to have their big green bus there, I hear, maybe, which gives you an opportunity to find out more. One of the things I think about when I think about a rally and standing up and marching and things like that, how do you carry it out into the world? It sounds like, from what you're telling me, there's enough inspirational events, tables, speakers, that you'll find something that you can grab onto and get involved. That's the bottom line. As you say, first she walked, then she ran, not necessarily run for office, but find something to be part of.
Well, she ran is. It's not just stepping up to the plate to run for a public office, but also each of us can run. Each of us have our power to get active and get more active. It's not like many have not been active, but it's a powerful movement, I believe, a kind of a watershed moment for women in this country. And we know we have strength within. Now we just need to get it out there and make some changes for the betterment of for women and for our families and for the world.
Sparrow, you and I were talking the other day about you've been an activist for a long time. You have a history, and you said something about that this era feels a little different to you than before, that there's fires popping up all over the place. Is that?
I think one of the major emphasis I'm seeing finally, which is wonderful, is women being represented in their local and national level. We have so many women running in record numbers. And it isn't that they're running just because they're women. They're running as women who have the message that we as women have always wanted to be put forth. And I remember seeing a picture just recently in Washington, D.C. They had a women's council meeting, and there was no women there. These were all men, congressional men, who were deciding women's health issues. And there's no women sitting at this table. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a powerful message to us. And I think we're in a time of women feeling that they can do this, that this is their time. They're calling this the year of the woman. And again, this isn't to slam our brothers down or leave them behind or take away from them. This isn't about taking away from anybody any rights or power. This is about letting us at that table to be included in these vital issues that together we can we can fix this stuff and get it right.
Well, that sounds inspiring. Actually, we've always, I remember my mom, she's 91. And when I was a little girl, she said, if women ran the world, there would be no war. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a theme in the heart and soul of what we know. But I think the contact or the picture at that table is going to be a lot different coming up. And I think that's what some of this is about, is equalizing and making it work in a different way.
So just as a reminder, this is on Saturday at noon at the Sandpoint Middle School. Just come, and there'll be speakers and tables, and then they'll from there, there'll be a march. What's the root of the march?
Basically, it's down division, and it's a 1.1 mile route loop that will take about 30, 40 minutes, because it's more like a stroll. We're not going to like go hard. Right. And some people may want to just come out for a section of it, and they can turn around and go back, because we're going to be in a really good area. One thing I do want to, speaking of marching, is, or rather going to the rally, is this is at the Sandpoint Middle School gymnasium floor. So folks need to think that, not wear heavy, heavy marring boots, tracking in a lot of dirt. We're going to take a lot of efforts to try to keep that down. We have the whole upper balcony, so if those people do come in with heavy boots, they can go up there. But it's best to come in just some clean shoes, some clean soft shoes, and have boots in a bag to move back into if you want, if we're out on the sidewalk. But
you can bring your slippers.
You could bring your slippers.
Yep. And they've been, and it's so nice to have the support of the school and that they're opening their doors to that nice facility.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we support our schools, and our schools are supporting us.
And Robin, Sparrow. I'm going to always call you Robin. I'm sorry. But Sparrow, do you have one last thing to say? We're kind of going to wrap this up a little bit about the North Idaho Women's March 2 that's coming up this Saturday at noon at the middle school.
Use your voice, women. Use it. Be there. Represent. Bring your fire with you. We all need it. We need to be there for each other. Bring your brothers and your husbands. Everybody's included. Let's do this.
It looks like your father is out there waiting for you. A guy. The other thing that I'm excited about that's going to be there is information about how to vote. Not only how to vote, but encouraging when you have information about what's coming up in the elections. You know, all these women possibly running for election, you have to get out and vote. That's my big thing. Mm-hmm. So there'll be an information booth about voting.
And a place to register.
Yes, indeed. So we want to thank you for coming in, telling us about the North Idaho Women's March 2 that's coming up again Saturday, the 20th, at the middle school at noon.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, anytime. We have a song we're going to put on, but we'll be back with just a little bit of information about the community calendar. But this song is, of course, Aretha Franklin, Respect. Why not, right? always good, Aretha Franklin. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And that was Aretha Franklin, Respect, and that's an important word these days. This is The Morning Show, and I'm Susie Prez, and I'm here with my co-host, Jean Girth. We have a little bit more information for you coming up on The Morning Show tomorrow, Thursday, January 18th. It's Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. Their guests will be Hannah Combs from the Pend'Oreille Arts Council, who will talk about their upcoming event called Klondike. That's, again, at 8 on 88.5 KRFY. And next week, Tuesday, The Morning Show hosts Julie Calamine and Phil Huff. Their guests will be Jack Nesbitt. And on Wednesday, Chris Bessler will be back, and Chris and I will have our Sandpoint Mayor, Shelby Ronstadt, who will bring an update on the city of Sandpoint and project reviews. That should be interesting. And Thursday, January 25th, on The Morning Show, Jim and Jack, their guests will be Ben Olson, the publisher of The Reader. He's wrote a play. It's called Death of a Small Town, and they're going to be talking with the director of the play. I know the name. But, you know, Ben is amazing because he does the reader. He writes songs. He writes music songs. He's in a band. And then he writes a play and produces it and probably is in it. So
wow.
We'll hear all about it, though. So that's next week. And, you know, so what do you have there, Jean? There's some stuff coming up in the community.
Yes, this is the community calendar. Today, the Panhandle Forest Collaborative Meeting is going to take place at 1 p.m. at the Bonner County Administration Building's first floor conference room. That's technical advisors, members of the public, and media are invited. We also have in that same room, I believe, at 5:30, there's going to be the Bonner County Natural Resource Plan public hearing. And I believe this is the last chance for public input on this plan. You can Google Bonner County Natural Resource Plan and get a copy of it and take a look. And Bike Movie Night. Greasy Fingers Bike Repair hosts the Bike Movie Night starting at 6 p.m. at, I guess, where is it, Susie?
Probably at
Greasy Fingers.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, and tomorrow, starting tomorrow, the Banff Mountain Film Festival at the Panada.
Big deal.
Big deal. These online tickets are sold out. Check area locations for availability. So go to panada.org to find out more about that.
I think they sell them at Eichardt's, Eve's Leaves, the usual ticket outlet places.
Uh-huh.
And those are three nights. It's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night for the Banff Film Festival.
Yes, you're right.
People love that. It's a big party.
It's a big party. Yeah. I've been there. It goes late.
Exciting, innovative outdoor movies, shorts, longs, all kinds of stuff going
on. Lots of interesting stuff going on there. And then, you're going to help me with this one. Is that February or is that...
You know, I think it starts tomorrow and goes through February 1st. It's Backyard Beekeeping. There's a lecture, and you can go to the NIC Workforce Training Center by calling 208-769-3333. And you know what? We're out of time.
All right. Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, it's really been nice to have you here. Jean, I think that we're going to pull you in as much as we can to be a co-host on the morning show. Right now, we're going to say have a great day out there in the big world. And this is a song. We're going to go out with a song by Red Molly, one of my currently favorite songs. Do I Ever Cross Your Mind? Again, have a great day.